We live in a country that's founded on ideas of freedom and liberty. Yet, liberty and freedom doesn't mean that there's not restraint. You know, we have laws, we have regulations, we have certain expectations. And it could be said that the very laws that we have give us our freedom. You might wonder, well, how is that? One of my friends has been several times over to the Philippines to preach. And he says that there are places there of mass chaos. And it's at intersections that there's not any rhyme or reason to the intersection. Everybody's trying to cross at the same time. There's no rules governing that behavior. Even in a small town, it would take a half an hour to cross just because of the disorganization. On the other hand, you know, when we look at our traffic in Birmingham, I know sometimes we complain about it, but it's generally pretty organized. You know, depending on who the driver is in front of you. But, you know, if there's not a lot of traffic, if it's not rush hour, I can get up to Drill's parents probably within half an hour on the other side of town in Mount Olive. And so you think about the area in which we live. We can travel most any place we want in this general area pretty quickly. It travels pretty smoothly because of rules, because of somebody has thought that out. When I went to Japan, it is a very densely populated area in Tokyo, and it's much more organized even than it is over here. So when it comes to raising children, I think there's some applications that can be made to the ideas of freedom and liberty and how sometimes there are restraints that have been put into place. When we look in the New Testament, there's certainly a lot that's said about that. And one place that we often look to is Ephesians chapter 6, verses 1 through 4. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise that it may be well with your soul, or may it be well with you and you may live long on the earth. And a lot of times my father would stop right there and my brother would say, you got to read the next verse, Dad. You got to read the next verse. And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. And so there's instruction here both for the children. There's also instruction here for the parents. And I want to talk just for a few minutes tonight about the subject of setting boundaries and how that comes into play with parents and their children and what the Bible has to say about that. I don't do a whole lot of lessons on this topic and probably should, and don't want to neglect that. But we have some good examples and we have some bad examples that we see in the Bible when it comes to restraint. Now, Eli was one that his sons were a disaster, as Donald Trump would say. They were a disaster. 1 Samuel chapters 2 and 3, we can see that they were not behaving properly. You know, they took what they wanted from the offerings to God. If you look in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 12, it says, the sons of Eli were corrupt. They did not know the Lord. And for the next chapter, chapter 3, verse 13, I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows, because his sons made themselves vile and he did not restrain them. So when people were giving offerings, these sons of Eli, the priests, they would take what they wanted from that offering to God that was supposed to be offered to God. And what we're told in 1 Samuel 2 is that if they wanted something and somebody wasn't, you know, willing to give that to them, then they would threaten to take what it was that they wanted by force. And so really an example of bad behavior. And Eli was warned about his sons. They needed to be punished, but Eli was not willing to rebuke them. But he talks to them. If you look in chapter 2, verse 22, it says, now Eli was very old, and he heard everything his sons did to all Israel and how they lay with the women who assembled at the door of the tabernacle of meeting. So he said to them, why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all the people. No, my sons, for it is not a good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people transgress. If one man sins against another, God will judge him. But if a man sins against the Lord, who will intercede for him? So Eli stated some things that are true. These things are very true that he said. You guys are not behaving right. I can't believe that I raised two sons such as you that behave in such a way. And he rebukes them verbally. And it says, nevertheless, they did not heed the voice of their father because the Lord desired to kill them. So he talked with them. And what we see with Eli is he's somebody that didn't follow up with anything here. And we often see that with parents where they will, and we'll talk, I'm getting ahead of myself, but they'll talk and say things. And they get used to their mother's voice, or they get used to their father's voice, saying the same things to them over and over. And you can imagine that Eli may have had these words several times with his son. But there wasn't anything behind it. And he didn't follow up. His son's behavior required punishment, and actually required punishment by death according to the law, because their refusal to listen alone was against God's law, as we see pointed out in Deuteronomy chapter 21. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and who, when they have chastened him, will not heed them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of the city, to the gate of the city, and they shall say to the elders of the city, this son of ours is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard. Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stone, so you shall put away the evil from among you, and all Israel shall hear and fear. I've often wondered when I have read this, how many times did this actually happen, and how many times did kids have to see it happen before they knew that they did not need to be a rebellious son or daughter? But the indication that we have here with Eli's children is maybe this was not being practiced, or they did not feel like their father was going to practice it, at least. And so here is Eli. He's a high priest. He's allowing his sons to continue serving as priests, even though they're involved in so much evil. But clearly God is not pleased with Eli and how he dealt with his sons. We also see King David. King David had two sons that tried to overthrow his kingship. In 1 Kings chapter 1 and verse 6, that his father had not rebuked him at any time, saying, why have you done so? He was also very good looking. His mother had mourned him after Absalom. So David here had a son Absalom and another son that were both rebellious. And really, when you look at the life of David, it's one of the low lights that you see of him becoming so distressed and distraught over the death of his son Absalom. And you see the way Absalom treated David. No respect for David at all. Very much a shameful situation. Proverbs chapter 29 and verse 15 tells us that the rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. A child who gets his own way, who's left alone, is going to bring shame. There's lots of wise writings in the book of Proverbs about the way that children should be raised and how they can be disciplined, which really goes counter to what a lot of people today either believe or practice. But as we saw in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, your fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. This training and this admonition, it infers that there's going to be rules. It infers that there's going to be discipline. What is admonition? Admonition is a big word. It just means advice. It's teaching. It involves rebuking. It involves encouraging. And discipline, as Noah read for us in Hebrews chapter 12 tonight, the Hebrew writer talks about the way that Christians are disciplined and how God disciplines us. And the Hebrew writer is inferring that, you know, when you grew up, your fathers disciplined you, so don't be surprised when the Word of God disciplines you today in much the same way. Do not lightly regard the discipline of the Lord. Do not be weary when reproved by Him, for the Lord disciplines the one whom He loves and chastises every son whom He receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? Now, I've certainly mentioned many times that my father, you know, disciplined us. And, you know, maybe sometimes I felt like I didn't deserve the discipline. But I know what his intent was. His intent was to bring us up as God would have us to be brought up and to teach us. And he was doing that to the best of his ability. He certainly wasn't passive in his teaching of us and his handling of our situation. But too many times parents don't take this seriously enough. Too often parents give in to the demands of a child, and you often wonder who is ruling who. Is it the child that's ruling the parent or the parent that's ruling the child? Sometimes parents hope to buy their children's favor. You know, they want to be their friend. And I can tell you that I never felt like my father was trying to be my friend when he was disciplining me. I knew that he loved me and that he wanted the best for me, but I did not feel like he was trying to be my father. He was not trying to be my friend. But sometimes people lose sight of this. They're hoping to buy the favor of their children. But true love for a child means that you are seeing to them receiving the proper training. And sometimes it doesn't mean that you are currently being loved by the child in return. I know that sounds kind of harsh, but sometimes children don't realize that they are being loved or what's being done for them is out of love. And hopefully one day they will see it, because frankly, at some time, you just don't like the training. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 11, "For the moment, all discipline seems painful rather than pleasant, but later it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." I know every time that I got a spanking, that I was not coming away from that thing, "Well, he sure does love me, and I sure do love him." It's not what I was thinking at all. I won't tell you what I was thinking. But the result of what he was doing, he was trying to teach me a lesson. The training, the discipline doesn't seem good at the time. It seems painful. Well, how many people really are that way? How many people really embody what we see taught here? Learning to grow up is understanding that you don't get your way all the time. That certainly is a lesson for right now in our society, isn't it? That you don't always get your way. And it's important to learn how to come to grips with that. Somebody that gets their way all the time usually is headed for a rude awakening, or they're going to make life very hard on a lot of people. So let's use a few practical examples here. And I'm not going to use any examples from my own life or the life of my kids, but I'm going to use a couple from a book. Number one, too often parents mistake yelling for discipline. I know nobody does that, but if you know anybody that might yell for discipline, you can relate to that. In one of John Roseman's books, he says that he uses this example. He said, "On a number of occasions over the past year, so I've had the occasion to watch some of these pretenders of strict discipline, to be, quote, strict with their children." Here's a composite example of how they corrupt the term. And I like the child's name that he uses here. He calls him Rambo, and so, you know, that's just asking for trouble to name the child Rambo. But, "Rambo, give me that." And Rambo looks around oblivious. "Rambo, did you hear me? Yes. Well, I'm just playing with it. Just let me play with it. I don't care. Give it to me. It's not a toy. But Mom, no, give it to me. Just let me play with it for a while. Please, not now. Give it to me. And Rambo jerks the toy back away from Mom. Rambo, give that to me right now. You ever seen anything happen like that? You kind of get the picture. This is kind of the game of here we go around the mulberry bush. Right? It can go on for 2 or 3 minutes until Mom, finally has a conniption. And Mom wins or grabs it somehow. So the yelling goes on for some period of time before one or the other wins. So what should have happened? Well, Mom, in a perfect world, she asked for the object, and as soon as he started acting oblivious, she should have lowered the boom. Off to the room for an hour or two, or a spanking, or some kind of loss of privilege. And the child may scream, may stomp, may yell. But Mom doesn't have to justify her judgment. There was something that was done that was wrong, and punishment came as a result. And there's a biblical principle behind that. In Proverbs chapter 23, 13 and 14, do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die. You shall beat him with a rod and deliver his soul from hell. My father's favorite verse. Punishment comes as a result. Do not withhold correction. And when the child needs correction, you correct them. And this certainly is not encouraging somebody to be abusive, to beat somebody with a 2x4 until they almost die. That is not what this is talking about. This is talking about somebody getting a spanking. They need to have their attention. The parent needs to have their attention and get their attention. And my mom always had a way of getting my attention. It wouldn't matter if we were sitting in the pew. She would pull the plug out of my leg if I was acting up in church. Nobody would be knowing what she was doing. She wasn't yelling at me, but she let me know. She got my attention. She just put her finger on my leg and pressed down or do something that would get my attention that it was time for me to zip it or I need to find some other place to sit for my protection. And getting taken to the nursery was not playtime for me. It was things had gotten really bad if I got taken out to the nursery. But there were other kids that liked to go to the nursery because, if I act up long enough, if I kick and scream and make noise until my mom can't take it anymore and take me to the nursery, I can sit on the floor and play with toys. And so, then they're conditioned to keep doing that because they don't want to sit in here and be quiet. They want to go into the back and play. But my mom didn't condition me like that. She conditioned me to sit still. And she had 3, maybe 4 of us when my sister was born to keep track of. I don't know how she did it. But she tried to embody this principle. She did not withhold correction, and neither did my father. And so she shouldn't feel guilty for doing that, nor does she really need to get angry. The children will misbehave, and punishments are needed in order to correct that behavior. It's just part of growing up. And too often, and I certainly would include myself in this category, there are those that are strict part of the time. And children push those limits. And it's a very hard thing as a parent to be consistent, because when I wanted to discipline is when I didn't feel good, or when I had a long day at work, or when I was in a bad mood already. That would be the time when I would want to enforce the rules. And that's not the way that it should be. It's not fair. And some learn that they will not always be punished. And they gamble that perhaps this is the time that they can get away with something. And like a gambler, despite the fact that they lose far more than they win just often enough that they believe that they can beat the system. And this is another thing that John Roseman points out. I thought it was a good point. He said, an undisciplined child is a compulsive gambler as well. The parents of one such 7-year-old girl, I'll call her JoJo, recently asked me how to cure their daughter's chronic disobedience. In response to an instruction of any sort, JoJo would pretend not to have heard. Can you believe that? Would pretend not to have heard or simply refuse to comply. Typically, she'd stomp her foot and yell something defiant, as in, "No, I'm busy right now." JoJo's parents told me they always made her sit in the thinking chair for 5 minutes when these incidents occurred. I said, "Always?" I asked incredulous. "Well," her mother said, "all right, not always, but most of the time. I mean, we try to be consistent, but you know, it's hard." So, if little JoJo was sent to the chair 7 out of 10 times, even though she's really not totally beating the system, she gets just enough rewards to think that it's worth the gamble. And I don't know if sitting in the thinking chair, unless it had, you know, electricity running through it, would be that much of a deterrent. You know, I can go sit down for a few minutes. But, you know, a gambler eventually runs out of money, but the child never runs out of mischief. In Proverbs chapter 22, verse 15 says, "Foolishness is bound in the heart of a child. The rod of correction will drive it far from him." So that just shows you that the child is going to be foolish, but you need to do something about it. And the rod of correction is going to drive it far from him. So sometimes we have a problem of inconsistency between our words and our action. And it's a problem that many, many parents have. And it's not, you know, just a, it could be an employer-employee relationship too, that there's not consistency in what, you know, something that is said and then how it's followed up on. So you kind of get that point. But a parent says, if you do that again, I'm going to, you know, and just fill in the blank. My dad sometimes would say, "I'm going to knock your block off." Well, he never did that. I mean, he's exaggerating. I still have a head. I guess that's what he was talking about when he said he'd knock my block off. But when a child does it again, sometimes all he gets is another warning. "Didn't you hear me when I told you that the first time, that if you do that again, I'm going to knock your block off?" Do we mean what we say? Matthew chapter 5, verse 37. "Let your yes be yes and your no, no." I mean, is there an application here for the way that we treat our children, the way that we discipline our children? Is our yes, yes, and our no, no? All the kids that are in here, is everything that their parents have ever said to them been consistent? When the child misbehaves and the parent says, "If you do that again, here's going to be the consequence," is it followed up upon? If it's not, then you get into the gambling again, that I don't think he really means it. He said that before and nothing happened. She said that before and you know, I know she gets this way sometimes when she's in a bad mood and she doesn't really mean it. She's not going to follow through on it. And then parents are frustrated. "Why do they keep doing this? Why will they not mind me?" Our yes needs to be yes and our no, no. A parent must not threaten what can't be carried out. Such as, "If you do that again, I'll knock your head off." You're not going to knock their head off. You'll be arrested. And hopefully that's just an expression. But even if your child knows that you really don't mean it, just think about what you're saying. If you threaten great physical bodily harm, you know, can it be taken as a joke? Are you saying, well, it's okay to exaggerate and tell lies? Is it? So, a better principle would be when you give a rule, decide in advance what the consequences should be. Now, this is something that Jarell and I have to try to do from time to time is, you know, if this rule is broken, what is it that we're going to do? How are we going to handle this? You see, we were already anticipating that the rule was going to be broken, but trying to plan ahead, what is it that we're going to do? And trying to make something up on the fly really didn't work well for me because usually I would overreact and say, "You were grounded for 6 months because you did, you know, it it would be something that was totally unworkable. And usually I'd end up punishing myself because I didn't want them in the house for 6 months. So arbitrary punishments and punishments that are not planned can be very inconsistent and viewed as inconsistent. And so, you know, talking about setting boundaries, and this is just a really narrow focus on a lot of different things that could be said about parenting, that, you know, as a child matures, you know, boundaries change, don't they? There's restrictions that are released. You know, it might be that we tell a one-year-old, you cannot climb up on this chair, but they may see me climbing up on the chair to change a light bulb or something, because I might be able to do that safely and they can't, and there may be someday that they can do that. There are restrictions that sometimes are appropriate for the age of the child, and the restrictions might change. You know, a young child may not be allowed to spend the night over at a friend's house, but an older child might be able to. So you can give more freedom, but with that freedom, that there comes more responsibility. Boundaries are there for guidance, and they can be moved and expanded as the child gets older. So you can learn lots of things from looking at the book of Proverbs regarding the raising of children. But you're not going to learn it from the world. What you're going to learn from the world is that you're going to see a lot of bad examples. And you're going to think, you know, I do not want this to be my child. I do not want my child to behave in this way. I do not want my child protesting in the streets because something didn't go their way. I do not want my child to have to break down and cry and need a therapy dog just because something didn't go their way. Children are our responsibility. It's too bad that people cannot have a test before they have children to see if they will be effective parents. We'd have a lot less population explosion on the earth if that were the case. So just about anybody can have a child, but it really takes somebody special to be a good parent. And God has given us great instruction on how to do that. And it's a challenge. And those of you that are in here with multiple children, it is a great challenge. It's a great responsibility. But we want everybody to know here that we're all with you in that challenge and want to help any way that we can. Because a lot of us have been through it to some degree, and we can look back and see how our parents handled us. And sometimes people have to look back and say, well, I had parents that didn't do this well at all. But you can learn from your mistakes, and you can learn from the mistakes of others to learn how to become a better parent. I'd like to leave you with just a few other scriptures that we can see in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 1, Proverb of Solomon, a wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. I don't know many people that would want to have that kind of reaction from their parents, that their parents would be so sorry that you inflicted that kind of pain and that kind of disappointment upon them. A wise son makes a glad father, but a foolish son is a sorrow to his mother. Also, in chapter 10, verse 20, or chapter 17, verse 21, he who sires a fool gets himself sorrow, and the father of a fool has no joy. In verse 25 of the same chapter, a foolish son is a grief to his father and bitterness to her who bore him. Proverbs chapter 29, verse 15, the rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself gives shame to his mother. Proverbs 19, verse 13, a foolish son is the ruin of his father, but the contentions of a wife are continued. I just put the whole verse in there. I don't really need to focus on the second part. but the foolish son is the ruin of his father. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 23, as for the commandment is a light and the law a light, reproofs of instruction are the way of life. I really like that particular passage because so many people today do not like reproof. They do not like correction. They do not like being told that they're wrong or that they need to be punished, for sure. Reproofs of instruction are the way of life. You're going to be continually learning. And if you are wise, you will listen to reproof and you will learn from it. In Proverbs chapter 29, verse 17, correct your son and he will give you rest. Yes, he will give delight to your soul. And certainly that is the goal. That is what we want by being the kind of parents that we should be, that in the day when we see them grow up to be faithful children of God, that they will give delight to our soul. And so let's do what we can to raise our children in the right way so that they can be an honor to us, but ultimately be an honor to God and be useful in His kingdom. I hope these things be useful to you, give you something to think about. If we can help you anyway to be a child of God, we invite you to come while we stand together and sing.